I don't know what this meeting is. The Sunday morning 9 a.m. marathon continuation meeting at the birthday party, the 54th birthday party of Overeaters Anonymous. I think they'll cut that up and edit it to make it sound really good. My name is Kim, and I'm a compulsive overeater and your speaker today. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. You know what? You should tell me your name.
I'm Vicki.
Hi, Vicki. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Before we get started, we ask that all cell phones or other electronic devices be turned off. To protect anonymity, no photography, audio, or visual recording is allowed except as recorded by the committee. Please be aware that if you are speaking or sharing and say your first name, your voice will be audible on the recording, and you must sign a release up on the table after the meeting. 3, the opinions expressed here today are those of individual OA members and do not represent Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. Would somebody please read the 12 steps? I don't see where the 12 steps are. Oh, that would be fabulous. Thank you. This is Vicki. I'm Kim. And you're?
Hi, Vicki.
No, she's Vicki. I'm Kim. And you're? Janine. Okay, that'd be great. You want to come up here and read it into the recording thing so they record that?
Hi, I'm Janine, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Janine.
Big Book, page 59. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service.
Oh, it's right up here. I'm sorry I missed that. The format for this 55-minute session is as follows: a short reading that I will share for 10 to 15 minutes, followed by open sharing. Again, the topic for this session is Together I Put My Hand in Yours. The following is a reading from Voices of Recovery, January 19th. I Put My Hand in Yours and Together, from Beyond Our Wildest Dreams, page 207. I was alone and I knew it. I was and am an odd duck, intelligent yet lacking in common sense and tact. I was angry at God. I felt cursed. I ate and ate and ate. Then came the miracle of this program. There, my weaknesses were assets. They made me a member. Amazing. I felt understood for the first time. That was the beginning. With fellow compulsive overeaters, I daily put down the food and walked the walk of recovery. I reach out my hands, knowing that together we could do what we could never do alone. In the rooms of OA, I learned the lessons of the AA pioneers. There is a God, and I am not God. In those rooms, I gradually experienced all the promise of the Big Book, all the promises that the Big Book describes. In these rooms, I am at home. Today and every day, I am grateful to God of my understanding that I was desperate enough to reach out and blessed enough to find the hand of OA reaching back. I will now share my experience, strength, and hope. Again, my name's Kim. I'm a compulsive overeater. Okay. And very grateful to be part of this birthday celebration, quite surprised. So the other thing that's interesting is I did not know what my format was, what my topic was. Somebody was supposed to get back to me. They didn't. And the recovery for me was fine. I just figured I'll show up. Whatever's supposed to happen will happen. If there's one person, so grateful. And if there's a bunch of people, that's great too. And that is not me. You know, I am the managing, controlling, manipulating, person that is in recovery. So just to get the numbers out of the way, I am out of about an 8-year relapse. I'm back a little over 5 years. I'm maintaining a 50-pound weight loss, and I'm not doing it. I'm participating, but I always thought that I was the one that was doing it. And I've been around these rooms a couple of times. This is my third time, and hopefully three times the charm. And it feels very different now. And what's different? The program hasn't changed. The people haven't changed. I've changed because I finally was willing to let go of my ideas, to not do it myself, to not do it my way, and to ask for help. And I never was willing. Even when I was in program before, I sort of ran my program how I ran it. I shared what I shared. I did a fourth step, but I didn't tell you everything. Like, I just did it my way. And what I found in coming back and really, I was really struck willing this time. I mean, I really had the relapse of all relapses. Before I came back, I could not stop eating. You know, every day was today's the day, and by 10 or 12 or 2 or nighttime, it wasn't the day anymore. And it started before Halloween, and it went all the way through the holidays. And I had made somebody who was in program a promise that if I couldn't get it, if I couldn't will myself to be on a diet, I would come back to OA. And I, of course, started, you know, January 1st. Actually, in my case, January 2nd, because we have a big party every January 1st, because it's an occasion to eat still one more day. And so January 2nd was the day, you know, the new folder and the new calendar and the calculation, like if I lose 2 pounds a week by September 23rd, I'll be awesome. And, you know, my new thing and drink water, and I walked around the lake, and then by 2 o'clock I was in the food. And so on January 3rd of 2009, I came back, and I really was struck willing. And here's what I've learned. I mean, I've learned many, many things, and I still have more things to learn. One, I learned that we as a population are smarter than the average population, I believe. And I don't say that just as flattery, like, aren't we fabulous? We're so damn smart. But the truth is, if I think about the way I lived my life, on one hand, I had to do the life stuff. I went to school, I got a job, I did all the, you know, I had friends, I don't know how, and a husband, oh, God bless him, and a kid. Like, I had to do the meaningful life things. And on the other thing, it's like listening to two songs simultaneously and having to keep track of both of them. The other song was about food. Constantly, all day long, what am I going to have? What am I going to have? What's later? I'll need more. Okay, tomorrow I'll be good. I'll have half. Then I won't have any. This went on constantly. And then I would look at you, oh, my God, she's thin. I wonder what she does. I was big on envy. You know, somebody at a panel yesterday told a story, and it made me laugh, about this wife accusing a man in a restaurant of oogling these girls. And she's like, you know, really upset. And he said, you know, the truth is I'm not oogling the women. I'm oogling their sandwiches. And I was a big oogler. Like, I would look at everybody, what you had and how you did it. And I just always made myself worse. And so that was all going on while the life stuff was going on. So this is not for a stupid person. We are really smart because we can have these two sort of tracks going on at the same time. The other thing I've noticed is that as a group, as a population, we're very independent. I'll do it. I can do it. We grew up with messages of, you know, of give it to me and I'll take care of it, that asking for help was a sign of weakness. In my family, you know, if you believed in God, you were a loser. Like, religion was just the opiate of the masses and you were on drugs. And so we learned this, like, I'll take care of it, I'll handle it. Most of us were very, you know, good at these task-oriented, just give me this study guide and I'll get it. And so I had to undo two things when I came in here. One is that I can be independent in certain circumstances. You know, nobody can pray for me. I mean, you can pray for me. That would be nice. But nobody can pray as me for me. Nobody can do my writing for me. Like, these are things that independently I have to do. Nobody can meditate for me. Like, I could sit in a guided meditation, but you can't actually do my... So there are things that I get to do using that, you know, that defect of independence and willfulness as an asset of, this is how I can work part of my program. But the other part of my program is that I have to ask for help. and I have to be willing to listen, and I have to do it another way. I get to throw out these old ideas, and that's very hard and very scary. And I remember thinking, you know, early on in this program, in this 5 years, thinking, what will I think about if I don't think about food? Like, maybe I'm not that smart, and maybe I'm not that interesting, and maybe, I'm afraid. And so the answer is that, you know, the other thing that happened with me that was really my old ideas was I really thought I could manage the food. I just needed more of what wasn't working. I mean, I didn't see it that way, but willpower wasn't working, so I need more. Counting calories wasn't working, so I need a better device to do that. And when I came into program, this is really recovery for me because I chose on the first day that I was back a sponsor who took a year candle who was not at goal weight. And I don't know who did that. Like, because I would be, if I was looking for a sponsor, I was like dating. I would check everybody out, and you have to have this kind of body and this kind of story, and, you know, and do you have kids, and are you married? Like, it has to all be perfect, and do you think I could, like, relate? Somebody took a candle. I went up to them after. I figured they have a year. I have zero. Can you help me? And she said, absolutely, but you're going to need to get a food sponsor because I'm not at my goal weight. So I kind of hesitated on that for a little bit, and then I found this woman who shared that she didn't do all the things that I did. She didn't count calories. She didn't weigh and measure. She didn't count points. And I was like, I just don't believe it. I don't believe it, but I'm intrigued enough to ask her to help me. So she told me about her program. How much time does that mean? It just indiscriminately goes, well, just wave at me or like make some noise. I'll stop. She said, do you think I'm lying? So I said, no, I think you're telling the truth for you, but I don't think that will work for me. And that was my problem, I don't think that will work for me. And she, being the brilliant, wonderful person that she is, said, are you willing to try it for a day? And I said yes, and part of me had the reserve of, I'm going to try it so I can tell her it doesn't work, and then I can go back to calories, weighing, measuring, weighing myself. I mean, I was crazy with that scale. You know, 17, I mean, I would get on the scale, and then I'd go to the bathroom, and then I'd get on. Then I'd move it, and I'd shift it, and like, what the hell? I'm fat. That's the answer. So I did it for a day. She told me, I made parameters about red light foods and what my food was going to look like. And then I did it for a day. And the first day was very weird. Like, I wonder how many calories. Oh, I'm not supposed to do that. Okay, I'm not going to do that today. Tomorrow, maybe I'm going to write down what I ate just so I can tomorrow, maybe I can calculate it up. And it's been over 5 years, a day at a time, that I don't weigh, measure. I don't weigh myself. I have no scale. When I go to the doctor, I turn around and I say, if you tell me, I'll have to find another physician. Because the number on the scale spins me out so badly, really badly. And so the answer is, why do I need to go there? So I have to be willing to put away my old ideas. And now when I think back of like all that calculating and measuring, was that apple 80 calories or was it 100? Was it 120? Like, it's an apple. Go forth and enjoy. You know, like, I'm crazy. I was looking at all the wrong places. So of late, and we were talking about this prior to the workshop, I was talking with Sherry about how program changed for me, you know, about the evolution of what I used to be very fascinated to hear what you ate. Or if somebody I knew in the outer world out there said, you know, so-and-so lost 50 pounds, and my physical condition was great. My first thought was, really, bitch? And my second was like, how'd she do it? That's what I wanted to know. And the answer is, today it doesn't matter how she did it, because if she did it for her, God bless her. I've lost 50 pounds before, and I've gained it back. So does that mean that that was a successful diet? No, because a success means that I maintain this and I do this as a way of life, and that's glorious. It is glorious to be able to go anywhere. It's portable. My abstinence is so simple. And so now I'm more interested in what's your spiritual life like? It says we, and that is big for me. You know, I really think people talk to me and I hear what I need to hear. And if that's not God, what is? The fact that I've been able to maintain an abstinence through really tough times and through really good times, because I'm a compulsive overeater, have a feeling, want to eat. Doesn't matter if it's good, bad, or indifferent. And so how is that possible? That has to be God. And so I collect evidence of God working in my life, doing things that I could not do for myself, saying things and then like almost turning around going, who said that? Or more often, who didn't say that? Because I don't have to say what I'm thinking or give you my opinion or tell you how to do it because I got so much work to do. I got reading and I got writing. I got stuff to look at. I got inventories. I'm in two programs. It's just glorious. I don't need to worry about what you're doing or you're not doing right. I don't have time for that. I'm on a quest. I'm on a mission. I'm a seeker. I don't have this vision of God like Santa Claus or, but it doesn't matter because when I turn it over, when I do the stuff that you tell me to do, because I wouldn't think this up. You know what? I mean, thank God that there were people who came before me. Who wrote this? How did this happen that somebody wrote a whole book about what I was like and I thought I was a freak of nature? I'm the only one who thinks this, who does this, who behaves this way. I'm the only one who's as insane as the jaywalker or who's insane as the person with the whiskey and the milk. When I was first in program, I thought, big book, that has nothing to do with me. I'm not an alcoholic, but I am an alcoholic. It's just with food. And so today I do what you tell me to do, even if I don't quite get it, and if I don't do it perfectly. And also what I found is, especially, this is good, I don't know how much time I have, but I want to tell a little 11th step story. When I got to the 11th step, because I love doing a 10th step, and I have my sponsees do it, and I think it's a really great way to close the day. You know, it says we live a day at a time. And so 10th step for me is like I get to close the book on yesterday, and if there's residual stuff left over, that goes on the tomorrow stuff, but I can let go of all that. Then I got to the 11th step, I was like, why do I have to do this? I mean, I'm working my program, my food is good, I'm starting to lose weight. Like, I don't need to be that holy, do I? Like, really? And my sponsor said, and I said, I can't sit. Like, I have monkey minds, and I'm a multitasking kind of like. And she said, would you be willing to meditate for a minute? Sit quietly, breathe in and out, let thoughts come and let thoughts go. So I was like, well, okay, I could do a minute. A minute was excruciating. A minute, I was like peeking, like 40 seconds? Like, really? That's still left? I mean, it really felt that I kept on doing it. I don't know why, because she told me, and I wanted what she had, and so I did it. And then I started to do it, and then a minute turned into two, turned into five, turned into 10. That's my limit, 10. But here's what I learned, the big pause. And I didn't understand that something else was going to come out of that 11th step, that I can pause, that when I'm in a Mexican restaurant and chips are delivered, I can pause. I don't have to reach. The bread comes in a restaurant. That's nice. I can pause. When somebody says something ridiculous or mean or whatever, I can pause. Like I learned a skill through the 11th step that I didn't want to do, that meditation, I don't know what that is, and I don't know how that has anything to do with me, except that it's just, and I think it just gets bigger from there. You know, and so the prayer too, you know, I say the serenity prayer. I have a very big issue going on in my family, and it's not of my making, but it does affect me. And I use the serenity prayer all day long, morning, like before, when I wake up, at night, and like many times during the day. And what I realize in saying it so much, you know, it starts to make a little different kind of sense to me, is that I am asking God for serenity. That in order to do these things, to have the wisdom to know the difference, to have the courage to change, to leave stuff, I have to have serenity. Because otherwise I can't do it. If I'm busy all over the map, I can't calm down and I can't get there. So how do I work on serenity? And that's what my writing is lately and my meditation is about, is how can I just let things go? Turn them over. You know, I love to keep my writing from years back because I'm very dramatic. And, oh, on the page, I am just a drama queen. And then I read back and I go, really? Really? That was it? Like, that was the thing that made me insane? So maybe perhaps going forward, when I'm all dramatic and histrionic, oh, my God, this is the... I can think, really? Like, because in 6 months or a year or 2 years, is this really going to matter? And so I just have been practicing the serenity, the peace around, I don't want to binge. I'm done. But I hope that you'll share. I thank you for coming, and thank you for letting me share. And now we do something else. The following is a the meeting is now open for 3-minute pitches. And as it said, if you came in late, if you share and you say your name, there's a release to sign, which I don't see where it is, but just on this piece of paper. Okay, so just sign the release, and then we're good to go. We're open for 3-minute pitches. Please focus your share on the topic or whatever. Please limit your share to 3 minutes to give others a chance to share. This session will conclude at 10:55. Who would like to share? Thank you.
I already said my name, so I'll say it again. My name's Janine. I'm a compulsive overeater. Was there a For Today reading?
On the other page. It's a Voices of Recovery reading.
This one here? I was alone and I knew it?
Yeah.
I was and I'm an odd duck, intelligent yet lacking common sense. I was angry at God. I felt cursed. I ate and ate and ate. Then came the miracle of program. There my weaknesses were assets. They made me a member. I felt understood for the first time. That was the beginning. With fellow compulsive eaters, I daily put down the food and walked the walk of recovery. I reached out my hand knowing that together we could do what we could never do alone. So, yeah, that's a good reading. I was about 50 pounds more than I am now, and it took me 24 years in the program to put down the food. So I spent 24 years trying to be on your food plan, all the different food plans, and I couldn't figure out what my food plan was until my sponsor said, Janine, why don't you put the sugar down? You don't have to do it forever, but just for 30 days. And I said no. And then the next day I said yes, because I was a rageaholic besides being a foodaholic, and I was raging at my son, and I was afraid that it would get worse because he was getting older. And so once I put the food down, I was able to look at some of the character defects and assets. And I had gone through 4 steps before, and I had white-knuckled my way through like a year of abstinence or 4 months or a week. But I never had long-term abstinence until 2007, and so it'll be 7 years this May. And I'm very grateful for that, because I like I said, 24 years, and I see people in here for a long time, and there are a few people that have been compulsively eating for, you know, the time in the program, but there's not a lot of them. Most people come in, they either lose their weight or get abstinent right away. It took me a long time, but I had to find a food plan that worked for me, that my higher power helped me with, and my sponsor. And so I'm very grateful, and I think I'll just close with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Well, sharing is being of service, so who would like to be of service?
Hello, my name is Morley. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Morley.
So the theme of this workshop is, I put my hand in yours, right? Yeah. The whole idea of an overeater being part of a group, or an overeater depending on somebody else, my whole life shut down when I was really, really young. I never grew into regular relationships with people in general. And I was an isolator par excellence. I lived in the desert for many years as a hermit, actually. And one of the big challenges of recovery was learning how to put my hand in someone else's or accept someone else's hand. And what I've come to understand is it's the primary, most important thing I can do in this world, to be part of other people's lives. and to I can't get recovery. Someone said, if you're doing this on your own, you're not doing it. You know, you can't do recovery on your own. Otherwise, it's just self-will all the time. And being part of a meeting, being part of a workshop, being part of a conference, a birthday party, is all about learning how to live with other people and get out of yourself, get out of myself. And I'm really good at structured times in meetings, like getting up here and sharing. I've got a three-minute thing to share, right? But the minute it's over, I bolt. I have a hard time with unstructured time being with people. But that in-between time is really where the recovery is. It's really where the share is, when I'm actually in relationship with other people in recovery rather than just hiding in the structure and coming and going. I used to say that I used to walk between the raindrops and avoid people even in recovery. And I did that a lot by giving service. I was a prodigy of service when I first came into program. I gave a lot, but I isolated that way. I isolated by doing a lot of, by taking on a role and doing things instead of just hanging out and being with people. And so I've been in program for 33 years. And my whole program has led me, and my whole life has led me to this kind of consciousness, this awareness, that there's absolutely nothing more important than just being connected to other people. And it's really wonderful having a program. It gives me opportunity to take little baby steps. And all these tools, the writing and the telephone calls and the 12-stepping and the meetings are all ways to be with other people. And so I go outside my comfort zone a little by staying out in the hallway and talking to people. And after all these years, it's still kind of like pushing the envelope for me. And but there's no way of getting recovery or staying abstinent without a shared life. And in fact, there's no way of being part of the world without having a shared life with other people. Different circles of friendship, different circles of concern really require being part of other people's lives. And I've grown that way a lot. And I'm really here because I've needed the reinforcement of the collective life to come to this conference. It's really kind of reinforcing my experience of recovery as a shared opportunity. And so thanks for letting me share. That's it.
Hi, my name is Phil, compulsive reader. And thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. I was sitting in the back there, and as you were sharing, I was going back to when I first joined Overeaters Anonymous back in 1989, and I was this 26-year-old ignorant fool, didn't have any clue what the heck I was getting myself into, right? Because I was advised by a therapist, you keep talking about food in therapy session. You need to check out Overeaters Anonymous 3 times a week. And that's what happened to me, is I put food before my life. And they were suggesting that if I continued to keep doing what I was doing, I was going to live old and alone with no one to be around with. But since I've been in Overeaters Anonymous, I've learned the concept of together, and that idea that I think of tradition one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. And so when I start thinking that I can kind of do things my way, the answer is no. I was very, very fortunate back in 1991, while in Sacramento, to be able to have an opportunity to see Roseanne chair a meeting. It was a day in OA in San Jose, which is like a couple hours away. And she spoke on unity, and she also talked about step one. And one of the profound things that she shared about step one is that she took the word powerless and she added the word will before it. I don't know if you guys ever heard that, but that really helped me out a lot to remember that I am totally will powerless over food, and it's helped me out today. And the amazing thing about me knowing that I don't have to work this program alone is that at my second meeting, there was this one guy, this Asian fella. He at the time, his name was better known as Alan. He's since changed his first name. He greeted me at my second meeting. He welcomed me with open arms. And the wonderful thing about it is that today he's my sponsor. So it's just amazing what we can do by just sticking around in this program. And for that, I am so forever grateful. Thank you very much.
Good morning. I'm MJ, recovered addict and bulimic. And I didn't think I could go home without at least standing up and talking once for the weekend. And thanks for asking for service. It's kind of what got me up here. So I just, you know, would like to just say how grateful I am. I'm kind of a newbie in the program. I've only been in about 3.5 years. And I was a do-it-yourselfer. Like, you know, I heard someone else describe it as compulsively self-reliant, and that pretty much described me. And I'm still amazed at how difficult it is for me to reach out and connect to other people. And it's a skill that I've really been taught, you know, learning. I've been taught it over and over in this program and slowly grasping it. I'm kind of a slow learner. But I have a very gentle sponsor that I've had now for 2 years, and she's very lovingly guiding me through the steps. And I've actually gone through the steps 3 times in different ways. And every time I go through the steps, you know, I just get more and more out of the program. And I was also, it took me, you know, I have, beside being a compulsive overeater, I'm also a bulimic. And it's just bizarre. You know, I walked in the door the day I got a sponsor. I basically was struck abstinent for my bulimia, and that's been 3.5 years. But I struggled a lot with the eating for the first couple of years in program. Sort of, I'd get abstinent, you know, because I was trying to stay on how, which was no sugar and no flour. And just went back and forth. And then, I don't know, suddenly just something clicked. And I think it was, you know, being willing to have faith whether I believed it or not. And that's kind of what I hang on to. And being able and being willing to have that faith has really depended, has really been a result of being willing to ask for help, because that's what I just found myself unwilling to do. I just wanted to, every time I got back into the sugar again, I'm just like, I've got to do this. I can't call someone and admit that I've done it again. And when I became willing to ask for help, the help came. I just had to be willing. So I've learned so many things in this program. I look forward to learning so many more. And it's just this process and journey. And I just hope I continue to have the faith and the willingness to stay, because everything I hear from people that have lived a wonderful, full life, it comes from staying in this program, and that's where I need to be. So thanks.
Hi, my name is Cheryl, compulsive overeater. I'm so sad I wasn't here to hear you share, but it's all about put your hands in mine and together. I am from a shame-based family and very traumatic childhood, and it was always in secrecy, so I learned to isolate, to keep everything as a secret. So I isolated a lot in my teen years, my adult years. I got married, and he was my higher power, and for 25 years, and then I got divorced, and he no longer was my higher power, so I had to find a higher power. But food was always a comfort for me. Growing up in a very dysfunctional family, I had to have food. Food was my friend, and so I also have a big ego, and my ego helped me a lot also to survive my childhood, and because of my ego, I want to stay by myself. I can do everything by myself. I came into OA in 2006, and stayed in the program and got abstinent and lost 35 pounds and kept the 35 pounds off and decided I can do it by myself. I no longer need OA. And I started running, and because I ran, I figured I didn't need it because the weight stayed off. But what I found out, I didn't get the other twofold of the program, which is spiritual and emotional. And that's why I came back, because although I can keep the weight off, my life was very unmanageable. And so I know that I needed the program, so I came back. And thank God, and thank goodness for OA. And also found out that I need people in my life. I need people. I need that special connection. I've learned, you know, by habit just to stay isolated, and I have to get out of that because that's what has me unmanageable, and that's when the insanity comes in because I start thinking, and that's where the eating comes in. And what I've also learned, and I'm so glad you said share is service, because what I learned is that when I share and when I give service back, I get out of the me thinking. And the me thinking is what keeps me in the food. And I am so glad to be here. Thank you so much. I love OA. Thank you.
Thank you for your share. I'm Alice, compulsive overeater, and glad to be here. I put my hand in yours. My compulsive eating was when I was immobile. Most of the time when I had a back surgery, when I had a foot surgery, when I had something going on. And I didn't realize I was getting that big until I had to get the bigger clothes and the bigger clothes. And finally I said, you know what, I'm this heavy, I might as well look good at this weight. And my friend, though, she was, I don't know if you have eating buddies, you know, you put your hand in their hand too, you go eat together. And she would never gain a pound. And I was gaining weight, though. And I thought, well, we're eating the same thing, but she ate. I mean, she loved to eat. And I just ate. And one day she come to me and she had talked to a friend, a mutual friend of ours that was in OA and had suggested OA for her because she had admitted she was bulimic. And so she came to me and she asked me, would you go to a meeting with me? And I says, well, let's see if there's something close to our house here, because I lived, you know, it was Thursday morning, and we looked in the communique that we have in Orange County, and it said there was a meeting next door to my house. A church next door to my house was where there was a meeting. I said, okay, God. I didn't have a chance. And I said, you know, I got some weight I can lose. And I was 240 pounds, and I'm 5'7", so I was carrying a lot of extra weight. And I went to that meeting, and they're not supposed to give a food plan to anybody unless you have a sponsor, but somebody gave me one. And so I went home, and I knew I was going to get a sponsor, but I didn't know when, because the sponsors would stand up and then they'd say, how many sponsors are taking newcomers? And nobody would raise their hand. So for 45 days, I went home, did the food plan, went to the meetings. They said 3 meetings a week, 3 meals a day, no sugar and flour, no eating between meals. And I thought, I can do that. And I did it. But it wasn't, you know, I was miserable. I came to the meeting finally at 45 days abstinent, and I said, you know what? I'm really upset because you said it was a wee program, but nobody's going to sponsor me, so I can't, and I need a sponsor, you know. And I was crying, and the people in the meeting said, oh, my gosh. They didn't realize that that's how people could feel if you don't raise your hand that you're sponsoring somebody, you know. And there was like 30 women there, and only 4 were sponsors. And they couldn't because they had so many sponsees already. But after that meeting and after my spurting out what I felt, all 4 people came up to me and said, well, you know, I would like to sponsor you. But I had already picked somebody I wanted for a sponsor. And I said I would take her. And because she had had a lot of program in another program, plus she had 3 years abstinent, and I was in the other program for as long as she was, and so we had a kind of a camaraderie. But I ended up not realizing, she said, I'll take a chance on you. She said, the reason why I wasn't sponsoring is because I sponsor someone real heavy for 30 days and get real close to them, and then they go off because they lost their weight and they're gone. And she says, I can't handle that anymore. And I said, oh, no, I'm here. I will listen. And she thought because I had so much time in another program that I wasn't going to listen. Well, she told me to call her at 7 in the morning, and I called her at 7 in the morning. And the thing was, I wasn't missing. What I was missing was discipline, because I called her at 5:02, and she hung up on me. And then I called her at 7 o'clock. And she talked to me. So discipline was real important. And a person that you don't, that doesn't think they, that they don't know who you are until you open up. And that's what it is, putting your life in their hands, and they're talking to you, their life. And you, it is a partnership. And so we do have to do this together. Thank you.
My name is Jackie. I'm a compulsive overeater and alcoholic.
Hi, Jackie.
Service. I was very blessed when I came into this program a long time ago, 25 and a half years ago. I picked a sponsor who was considered a little tough, a little brusque, because I was a sales rep and I knew I could talk rings around most people. So, and she put up with absolutely no garbage whatsoever. Mm-hmm. About 6 months in, she sat me down and she said, when you walked in the door, there was a secretary of this meeting, a treasurer of this meeting, people who was a delegate, people who cleaned up, people who put out the coffee. There were people here who made it possible for you to have a place to go. Therefore, you will now become one of those people. So when newcomers come in, they have a place to go. Okay, I can do that. You know, I took the coffee commitment, and then I took a literature commitment, and eventually I took a secretary commitment. And this went on for a few years, and then she sat me down again and said, we have an inner group. The inner group was here when you came in. And those people were there to make it possible for you to have events to go to, workshops to go to, retreats to go to. So now you need to become one of those people. And so I did. And I took the easiest job available at those things because I knew nothing about how to be part of. I only knew what I knew from before, you know, go home, find something to eat, and close the doors, and go away, world, leave me alone. So Charlotte taught me, you have to be willing to give back what you have so generously been given. Without this program, I would still be a size 22. I know I would not be alive. The cardiologist told me after I had the triple bypass in 97 that had I still been eating the way I was before program, I would have been one of those people that had a nice big Thanksgiving holiday dinner, gone to sleep, and never woke up in the morning. The blockages were that big. So without this program, I would not have survived. Without this program, I would have not had a relationship that is absolutely delightful with my children. A wonderful marriage to a man in this program, may he rest in peace, that was a delight and a joy. And a life that I wake up in the morning and I say, thank you, God, instead of, ugh, God. Thank you for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Vicki, compulsive overeater. You guys, this actually isn't a microphone. It's only for recording, just so you know, so you don't have to talk into it. There we go. Thank you very much for your share. Yes, I always, you know, we're here. It's morning. It's always great to hear. And I also agree that when you're in a meeting, it's being a service to share. This is a we program. You know, I think about the fact that when I can't come to a meeting for a few weeks, it feels so yucky. I mean, it's a good thing I have my sponsor to call every single day, because then, you know, I put my hand in hers every single day and I have a connection. And I think that's a really important one for me. And then when I always come back, like I'm sure you guys have seen at the birthday party, you get to see people you know and people from meetings and everyone's happy to see each other. And, you know, because it's like you're my people. You know, I go to the gym and I can see like the skinniest little anorexic, or I can see I have, you know, there's a lot of my friends work out at the same time that I do. And I've got friends that are very heavy. And over the years that I've been in OA maintaining my weight, they've gone like ping pong, ping pong, ping pong. They're not my people. They're my friends. But I would never say anything. You know, they'll be like, oh, I just ordered another flush system thing. I'm like, cool for you. You know, like whatever works for you. But really, it's putting my hand in the hands of people in this program that helps me to keep working the program, that helps me to keep abstinent. I took a big book workshop last year, and, you know, by the time we got towards the end, and we were talking about step 11 and meditating, and, you know, the same thing, the women that lead this workshop were like, you could just lay in bed for like 1 minute and pray to God, just ask God for the willingness every single day. And I wasn't quite happy with my food plan at that point, but I didn't really know. And I just laid in bed every morning, I think for like 2 months. And I would say, I mean, I still lay in bed and say things, but this is one of the things I would say every morning was like, God, what is your will for me with my food? Because it's feeling a little icky, and I don't like to think about my food. You know, I want to live life instead of thinking about what is going to be the next meal. And I'm just feeling a little icky. And every morning I'd say that, God, what is your plan for me? What is your will for me today? And I'd say, like, what's your will for me at work? And I'm not amazed, but like, you know, it took a few months, and then one morning God said, you know what, Vicki? Maybe right now you need to just eat protein, fresh vegetables, and fresh fruit. And that's it. I said, okay, God, I can do that. And that's what I've been doing for like the last 2 or 3 months. And any thoughts of food are gone. I now just get up and I eat my breakfast, my lunch, and it's over with. There's no, by taking out everything else, I have no cravings whatsoever left in my body. It's now food is food for fuel, and I've never had that in my life. But I couldn't do that if I hadn't been going to this meeting and listening to other people's shares. That's what the whole WE program is for me. And with my sponsor, I get to learn to trust someone like I've never trusted someone else before. I get to say things that I'd never say to people. So, thank you.
Wait, well, share, and then you can do your commercial as part of your share.
As a share, of course, when you see all these miracles happening.
Can you come up, because it gets recorded in the microphone?
Yeah, sure. Oh.
My name is Socorro, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Yeah. Gratefully recovering, thanks to my higher power, OA, and each one of you. Thank you for being here. The very first meeting that I attended and was told, welcome home, I really felt that I was home. 71 years old, no, 70. When I started July of 2010, and I thought, this is where I want to be for the rest of my life, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 25 years, however many years my higher power wants to give me. And I learned in those meetings that, especially from one member who is now in the spirit world with Roseanne, she used to say, this program is not about losing weight. It's about repairing relationships. Relationships with our higher power, with ourselves, and with those that touch our lives. She always used to say, don't say that you're going to lose weight, because if you lose it, you're going to find it again. Say you're going to release it. So with those few words, I make my commercial. I think that once you work the steps, which I haven't done, I'm stuck on the fourth for the last 3 years. Three times I've started with different madrinas or sponsors, and for some reason I can't get past it, but I know I will when it's time. I'm not going to worry about it. But anyway, when you do get to the 12th step, I have been working the 11th step, by the way, without working the ones between 4 and if that's possible. But gratitude, you know, gratitude for all the miracles that are happening in my life. And, you know, and the automatic reaction is to want to give back. And this is one way, you know, to put your hand on someone that's here or that's not here. And so $1, a ticket, you know, the God will not be outdone in generosity. You think you're giving a lot by giving $1, $2, $5, it comes back 100-fold. And with that, can I sell any tickets?
It is now time to close this session. I would like to thank those of you who gave service at this session and all of you for attending. After a moment of silence, please join hands as we close with the third step prayer.
Well, next time, radar. Next time.